All right, I think we'll start as more and more of you come join the call. Thank you so much for being here with Partners of Progressive Israel. My name is Gilly. I'll be your moderator today. And let me give you some context to what we do. It's a webinar. It's hosted by the Partners of Progressive Israel. Partners of Progressive Israel holds a monthly webinar, includes conversations with Israel and Palestine series, which brings voices from Israel and Palestine to the American audience, providing an important link between progressives in U.S. and in the Middle East. Very important. My name is Gilly Getz. I'm an activist, photojournalist, and an actor, and my work is focused on Jewish American politics in recent years. Before we get started, I just want to get some things out of the way. Partners for Progressive Israel is an American nonprofit, 501c3 organizations dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and believes in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel inhabitants. Partners seeks to deepen American Jewish understanding of Israel's complexities in order to enhance their ability to advance for a progressive Israeli future. These are extraordinary times, and we are witnessing bombshell after bombshell hitting the Israeli political landscape as we are gearing up to the elections on April 9th. We are very fortunate to have with us today Akiva Eldal, who is a columnist for Al Monitor's Israel Pulse, formerly a senior columnist and editorial writer for Haaretz, and also serves as a Hebrew Daily U.S. bureau chief and diplomatic correspondent. His most recent book, Lord of the Land, that he wrote with Edith Zartal, is on Jewish settlements. Was one of the best in the settler movement, was one of the best bestsellers in Israel. Has been translated to English, French, German, and Arabic. It's called Lord of the Lands, and I highly recommend you read it if you're interested in the settlement movement, its past, and what we see now plays out in Israeli politics. So this is how the structure of this conversation will go. Akiva will talk for about 40 minutes. Anytime during his talk, you can type your question. And this is how we're going to take questions today. If you go down to the bottom of the screen, you will see a button called Q&A. You just hover your mouse on top of it if you don't see anything. You press that button and you can ask a question. And we'll ask the last 20 minutes of the call. We'll ask Akiva questions. So please feel free to do it during the call. So without further ado, we'll jump right into it. And thank you, Akiva, for being with us. And we'd love to hear from you of how you see things in Israel playing out in these extraordinary times.
Okay, thank you for joining us, and thank you for what you've been doing for Israel. I can add that my claim to fame is that I'm not an objective journalist. I'm also a peacenik. I admit that I always voted for Meretz, and this is what I'm going to do now. You can blame me for that or praise me. It's up to you. The eyes of the beholder. Well, we are here to talk about the elections, but also about what happened a few days ago. And I think that this is of no less importance than the elections. And I mean the unprecedented statement of AIPAC. And I'm sure that you will be asking me about it, and I will be happy to elaborate. Now, let's start with the elections. There are people who say that these are, and you know, I've been there for a while, and I have a deja vu. People are saying that these elections are the most important ones. But there is a school of thoughts between the analysts that believe that this is a kind of an interim elections, that this is a kind of a promo to the next elections that will happen after the Attorney General will indict Netanyahu. And he's going to make a statement in the next few days whether he's decided to indict Netanyahu or not. I believe that he will. The question is on which of the series of the investigations and charges and what Netanyahu is suspected of, whether it will be bribery or something of less strengths that will be just can end with a smaller indictment that we'll just talk about his crossing lines between his private interests and public interest and his private duties, conflict of interest between the business that he was doing with his lawyers and so on. I will not go into it. If you don't want to hear more, if you like, I can elaborate. But what I believe will happen after the elections is that the Likud will try, headed by Netanyahu, and probably they will end up the leading party, and they will be able probably to form a block of 61, because the name of the game is who will be able to block the others. It's not so much who will be able to form a government, because this is a different ballgame. And what Netanyahu will try to do is, of course, to buy the Orthodox parties, which are already in his pocket, but he will need to offer them more this time. Kahlon, if he will cross the threshold or not, this is another question. How many parties will not be able to meet the 3.5 threshold? And according to the Israeli law, if you fail to meet the threshold, all your votes are going to garbage, to trash, and they are not even part of the statistics. Which means that Netanyahu, and that's the reason Netanyahu made such a great effort to convince the the extra large right wing parties to merge with the extra large radical right wing radical racist fascist parties. I don't think that he's stupid. And I think that he expected and predicted that organizations such as J Street and you will protest. Actually, he was even planning, as I mentioned in my column that will be uploaded in a few hours, that actually he was even planning to use the attack to bash the so-called leftists and the usual suspects, the liberal suspects who are after him, and to compare the his alliance with those parties to, which is not true, the alliance of the Israeli Zionist left with the Arab parties, which is, of course, a racist demagogue argument that has nothing to do with the truth, because unfortunately the Arab parties were never considered since Rabin as even supporters or partial members, temporary members of the leftist Jewish bloc in order to block the others from forming government and then to get the Oslo, to get the support for Oslo, to get the majority in the Knesset for Oslo with their votes, which is very different from being the Shatchen, the how do you call this website that matches Jewish, it's Judate or whatever, it's he was playing the matchmaker between the devil and the extra large devil. So after the elections, when he will try to form a coalition, it will be much difficult for him to do this when once the shadow of the indictment or the cloud, the black cloud of the indictment will follow him. And it depends how strong the language of the Attorney General is going to be when in his statement of the indictment. It will make it, of course, more difficult for parties who consider themselves center to justify their alliance with a partner who is indicted and is going to be need to, of course, there is a hearing, and Netanyahu was begging actually the Attorney General to wait with his statement until the end of the process after the hearing, which he refused to do. Okay, everything is clear or any questions at this point?
That was great. Thank you, Akiva, so far. And just a reminder, you can type your questions at any time if you hover on the Q&A button. If you call to a regular phone, you can't do it. You don't have that option. But if you call to a Zoom, either the app or the computer, then you can have the option to ask any question during anytime you want. The question is, if you can elaborate on the blocks themselves, is there a possibility, for example, that Yair Lapid was quoted in the media as saying that he will never join a bloc when they, if they win, they will not join a Gush Chosem with their parties, but join the Likud, in some fashion, some unity, government, How would these blocks play out in such a scenario?
Well, actually, he doesn't need to do anything, you know, to be active in joining the Arabs. I hate what he said because they are legitimate Israeli citizens and they are eligible to vote. And they had even ministers in the Labour government before. So. I don't like what Lapid said, but what the Arabs need to do is just to sit back and watch Netanyahu sweating because he needs a 61. If he doesn't have the 61, he will need to go to Lapid and Gantz and offer them to join him. Now, they don't have to, okay, because once they will play hardball, it will be, you know, playing chicken. Who blinks first? So the Arabs are there to block Netanyahu, whether Lapid likes it or not. Is it clear?
Yes. The other question is, if I could just jump on that, it's why is the Attorney General, why is the Attorney General waiting? What is he waiting for until he... decides on the indictments?
I will be the devil's advocate in this case, and because I really don't like the pace of this affair. What is in the back of his mind is that he cannot afford to fail. Let's assume that Netanyahu will be acquitted. That means that he will be remembered as the Attorney General who brought down a prime minister that was elected by the majority of the Israelis. Actually, what Netanyahu, on the other hand, what Netanyahu is saying, his argument and his supporters are saying that after and if the majority of the Israelis will vote in favor of Netanyahu, the Attorney General does not have the authority to undo it, okay? He cannot overrule, okay, the Israeli majority, which is clearly not true, because even let's say if Netanyahu will get 30 or 32 seats, that means that two-thirds of the Israeli majority or three-fourths of the Israeli majority did not support him. So it's not that the majority of the Israelis are going to support him. Actually, he's been a prime minister for the last 10 years and before that, and still the majority of the Israelis don't want to see him back. Otherwise, they would vote for the Likud or right-wing parties that are clearly going to support him. The people who vote for the Orthodox don't really care who is the prime minister, as long as the government takes care of their needs.
Thank you. We have many more questions coming up, which we'll address in the last section of the conversation. I encourage you to keep pressing the Q&A button and keep asking the questions. Thank you. Please, Akiva.
Yeah, I see a question here.
Yes, well, the other question is, is there a likelihood that Avodah and Meretz, I assume Avodah will obviously get in the Knesset, Meretz won't pass the minimum amount of votes and will make it. So if Meretz doesn't make it to the Knesset, obviously we don't want to speculate, but it is a possibility. How would that change the political map in Israel and the discourse in the peace camp itself in the future?
I think that that's the most important question in the elections, because as I said before, I didn't finish my point because there are so many issues here. You see, the common wisdom is that Netanyahu will not be able to, you know, to eat the cake and have it, which means to even if he doesn't have to stay part of his day in court, there is only an indictment, it will be even difficult for Bennett and people who are trying to show some dignity to their voters, to their constituency, that they are not sitting with an indicted criminal. I believe that there are two options. It's either Netanyahu will have to step down, or the Likud will force him, his colleagues will force him to step down. If, for instance, Bennett and even Gantz will say, well, we are willing to join a Likud government, but not headed by Netanyahu. Okay, go and to the Likud and go for primaries and select a new leader, and then like Gideon Saar or Katz or whoever, don't delegitimize the entire party, we delegitimize Netanyahu. So it is possible that in this case, Netanyahu will form a unity government. Well, we have to add another element here, and this is, you heard what Kushner said, and this is whether Trump plan will be, I would say, realistic enough to become the platform of a new coalition, that whoever supports it, like Lapid, Gantz, Labor, and part of the Likud, maybe some members of the Likud will join the ultra-right parties and leave the Likud, like what happened with the disengagement from Gaza, with Sharon forming Kadima, with Shimon Peres and other Chaim Ramon from the Labor Party, and others are staying with the Likud. So this is also a possibility that we have to take into consideration in the analysis. Now, the other possibility is that Netanyahu will insist, and his supporters, his colleagues in the Likud, will decide that they want to commit suicide with him and go for the elections for the 22nd Knesset in 1 year, or maybe even in less than 1 year, with or without him. And in this case, it is very important to keep Meretz alive for the next elections, because if they fail and they fade out, it will be much more difficult to renew, to rebuild a party after it collapses, and to collect the pieces. And the same goes for the Labor. And this is why it was so important for the Israeli Zionist left that they will merge and will cross the threshold, because you have to look at the April 9th elections as just a promo, a preamble for the next elections.
Right, and there was reports that Labor and Meretz have eskimo dafim, so they will share the remaining sections of the vote. That was very good news for everyone.
Yeah, Gil, if Meretz or Labor, they don't meet the threshold, it goes to garbage. Right. Then this agreement is worth zero. Okay, because they don't take you into any account. You're not part of the equation if you don't meet the threshold. So any agreement between other parties are irrelevant.
Great. I'd like to maybe shift gear and ask, how is the unprecedented American Jewish American reaction by AJC and AIPAC? Criticizing the Netanyahu without naming him for the first time, definitely sending shockwaves in our community. How is that plays out in Israel or in the political dynamic running through the election?
The people who support Netanyahu will keep supporting him. They will believe him. They will believe anything that he says, even that AIPAC is a liberal leftist organization. You know, I am not very excited about the statement. I can't forget that they invited Hagee to be a keynote speaker in 2007, the anti-Semite, you know, that was also invited to the ceremony of the inauguration of the embassy. And AIPAC were always in favor of the Likud. Formally, they are impartial, but we know where they stand. And the ultimate test for me will be Netanyahu's performance, or AIPAC's performance, and how many times he will get standing ovation during his address in the next AIPAC's convention 2 weeks before the elections. I am afraid that they paid some lip service. They were actually forced to do it by AJC and other organizations. And perhaps some people there were thinking about a scenario where the supremacist would join forces with the Republican, and President Trump will be the matchmaker, and how will they look if they ignore what Netanyahu did this time? Actually, they were very careful not to mention Netanyahu. They mentioned Otzma Yehudit, the fascist, racist, Kahanist party that they don't like. But they didn't say anything about Netanyahu's role in this game. So I think that for a Jewish organization just to ignore a Kahanist party will be like playing right into the hands of the supremacist, because they are our supremacist. So if you can come to terms with their participation in the elections, you will not be able to open your mouth once the supremacist will run. But as I said, the test will be in the pudding, and the pudding will be served in the APEC convention.
And I think one of the things that's scariest from our perspective is the normalization of Kahana and the most racist elements in Israeli society. I understand there's some lawmakers, Israeli lawmakers, that will not sit in the same, they will not debate them on TV, they would not sit in the same table trying to fight this normalization. And one of the questions we have here is this the ascendancy of that type of politics of the right in Israel, a process of normalizing them. They'll be very hard to walk back once they're in the Knesset and have more power. Something you wrote about the process of that type of politics.
You know, Gili, I hate to say that a few years ago, I couldn't predict that there will be a minister of culture that will say that the asylum seekers, the African asylum seekers, those pure people are cancer. And I can add to that. I think that we are on a slippery slope, and things that few years ago looked like, I would say, a dream, a bad dream, or a fantasy, a bad fantasy, are now part of the reality. You see, the friendship between Netanyahu and Orban, what they, you saw the reports about their cooperation against Soros, George Soros, smearing a Jew and joining an anti-Semite campaign. And I can add to that. And look what happened with now was that even a minister from the Likud, Israel Katz, could not ignore the friendship with Poland and the Heksher, the legitimacy that Netanyahu gave them. Actually, what this government is doing in Sheikh Jarrah and in the occupied territories is not far from what the Kahanists are preaching to. Actually, they're doing what they are talking about. There is, you know, it's like this joke that you know, not people are doing in the pool things that they would not do from the jumping board. So what the difference is more in the style, in the language. The grabbing land of Palestinians and passing laws that legitimize taking private land from Palestinians to give it to settlers. This is what the Kahanists always wanted. So this government is performing it. The conduct of this government is the ideology of the Kahanists. So they are not actually putting Arabs on trucks and sending them away, okay? But they're doing everything, like people in Hebron, to the Palestinians in Hebron, to make them so miserable that they will leave. So it's nuances. So it's not a big deal. So it offers people in the right to put themselves more to the center. Well, we are not Kahanist, okay? We condemn the Kahanist. So for APAC will keep supporting the settlements and the occupation. And they will say, yeah, but we don't like the Kahanist, big deal.
One of the questions we have is, what is the difference between what's the line between Otzma Yehudit and Bayit Yehudi? And I would suggest the Yamin HaChadash, Bennett's new party. Where is that line as far as you can see it?
The line is that, you know, the Bayit Yehudi and the Likud, they are not doing the dirty laundry outside. They keep it at home. They're not bragging about being Kahanists. Okay, so it's, I think they have nicer masks on their face, but it's a mask. It's for people like me, for a liberal Jew, for someone who believes in a two-state solution and the right of every human being for self-determination. It's even, you know, some people would even say that we are better off with the Kahanists in the government. So the world will see. So we'll not be able, they will need to remove the pink mask, and we'll have to deal with the reality, and the international community will react to maybe to what's really happening on the ground. And they will be able to even to say that AIPAC didn't like the party, so we are not anti-Semites. If AIPAC didn't like it, so what do you want from us, the Europeans or and the Democrats in Congress? And maybe even some Republicans, decent Republicans.
Hopefully. There will be battle challenges for these parties to run, the questioning the legitimacy of the deal that Netanyahu made with the Otzma Yehudit Party and their legitimacy to run in general, according to Israeli law. And there was also reports that there will be challenges for the as part of a more racist campaign of the Arab parties to run because they reject the nature of the state or whatever the arguments will be. Did you know anything about the?
Well, I know that there are organizations and people who are appealing against the participation of the Kahanists. And of course, it will be followed by appeals to the Supreme Court against the Arabs on the basis of the national law that they don't support a Jewish state. You know, the Kahanists were outlawed before, and then they were able to run again. Actually, what about Lieberman? Part of his platform is suggesting to deport Palestinian, Israeli Arabs, and he was legitimized. What about Ze'evi Moledet that was running? And I want to remind you that the Labor Party was sitting in the government with Lieberman. And now it will be a test for this new Supreme Court after Ayelet Shaked was able, in the Minister of Justice, to appoint ultra-Republicans or conservatives to the Supreme Court, and it depends on them what they're going to decide. So there is a big question mark on this.
We have a question here. Will the Israeli media, especially TV and radio, normalize the Jewish Power Party? Will they allow a Jewish Party representative to express their racist viewpoints on the broadcast? Will this now be a normal voice in Israeli living rooms?
Well, it depends. If the Supreme Court and the committee, the electoral committee, will allow them to run, then they will get, according to the Israeli law, they will get, they will have a full right to put their ads on the media, you know, paid ads and clips. They will do this. And the Israeli media, you know, there is no such a thing as the Israeli media. There is Israel Hayom, which is Edelson, and there is Haaretz, the two different countries. The two, you know, this is media and this is paid media. This is, we call it, you know, Bibiton. It's a casino paper. It depends. I think that, on the other hand, it will be important for the media to expose them, so people would know what it's all about. So there is going to be a debate. These people were in the media before. You know, Michael Ben-Ari, one of their leaders, was member of Knesset.
Speaking of the party, there was reports in Yediot Ahronot about their financing and their connection to organizations that are on the terror list in the United States. Would that play any role in the decision-making?
You see, what role did it play that Hagee and company are behind Imtir Tzu and financed Imtir Tzu? And what role does it play that Sheldon Adelson, who said there is no such a thing as Palestinian people, and he is running actually, it's not a newspaper, it's a paid propaganda for the Likud and the Israeli right. It's not even a tabloid. And it was legitimized by the state comptroller. So, you know, it's a slippery slope, and we keep slipping.
I'd like to invite everybody to keep asking the great questions you're asking. The question we have here is there anything that can change this trajectory of Israel? I mean, is there a scenario, is there a way, short of a major war, the person asks, is there a way to change this political trajectory of moving the landscape so much to the right where it's unrecognizable anymore?
Yeah, you know, Israel can handle war with all Arab countries, but Israel cannot handle a war with the United States, against the United States. You know why? Because what do we do if we win? Who will support us? Who will give us the $4 billion a year? So Israel cannot afford a war with the United States. So other than war with the Arabs and terror and changing, you know, what happened after the first Intifada, which brought Rabin to Oslo, before that, the Gulf War that brought Shamir to Madrid in 91. If the Congress, the Democratic Congress, will use his power either to support Trump in a serious peace platform and endorse a serious balanced blueprint that will be put on the table, like the Clinton parameters, along the Clinton parameters, or they will decide, the Congress, to punish Israel for, as Obama said many times, for undermining the American interests in the Middle East. If the Saudis, which are of loss, no less importance to Trump and the Republicans than Israel, will put their foot down, or the Egyptians. Depends, you know, in March, a few weeks before the elections on the 31st of March, the Arab League is going to convince in Tunis, and they will have to ratify the Arab Peace Initiative. If, for instance, the American Congress and the American President will decide to endorse it, which means to put on the table a blueprint that will say, Israel, you have to say yes or no to a two-state solution. In return, you're going to get full normalization with all Arab and Muslim countries. And you have to choose between one state or two states. Actually, Trump said it, that if Israel doesn't want a two-state solution, one day we will have a Palestinian prime minister. So there is, maybe I'm fantasizing, but theoretically, this is the other option, other than a great shock that will happen if, and there is a possibility, the Palestinians will hand over the keys to the West Bank and to Gaza, to the Israeli government, and say, now you go back to the pre-Oslo era, and you pay the salaries, and we will not be your subcontractors against the Hamas. This is another possibility.
There were reports that Abu Mazen actually threatened that that before the election there'll be chaos if they weren't willing to have the financial agreements that they committed to. But I think that's still evolving. I think that that went right. So we have a quick question here.
Yep. Abu Mazen is 83. We have to mention this. This is a factor.
The question we have here is, what can Meretz do to get more votes, to connect with, I guess I can ask about the whole bloc. What can they do to connect more Israelis? On an optimistic note, there is finally an alternative to Netanyahu. I think it's very clear, so that's a good development. But what can the left do to get more traction with the voting public?
I wish I had an answer, because this is, for me, it's very emotional. There are my heroes, there are my friends, I don't want even to think about it, that Meretz will not be there. I think it's a bit too late. I think that they don't have a good list. There are good people, but the list is not good. Individually, each of them is a good lawmaker, a good public figure, but they're not attractive. Some of them are has-been. People want, as you see, the support that Gantz and the generals are getting. People want to see something new. I know some of my friends who are saying that they have a problem with having two, one Druze, one is an Arab, out of, the first five on the list are not Jewish. And to me, I think they should be proud of it, that Meretz has two Arabs on top of the list. But there are people who will vote Labour because of that. They will not, of course, go further than that, but they have a hard time with the list. What they will do now is what we called a Gewalt campaign. A Gewalt campaign means, and they did it before, is that if you let us go, the Bloc is going to lose. It's not that Meretz will fade away. The Bloc cannot afford. Actually, they will need to ask the Labour and Gantz, if they see that it's a touch and go, to encourage their voters to vote Meretz. It seems a paradox that one party will ask the voters to vote for another party. But I think that this will be the message. This will be maybe an authentic message, that if you want Netanyahu, you want to get rid of Netanyahu, vote for Meretz, because it's guaranteed that they will not join Netanyahu. As you know, we don't, history shows that Labour did it, Lapid did it, and Gantz didn't rule it out. So this should be their campaign. If they're listening to me, this is what they need to do.
Fantastic. Thank you. There's a question here about the Moscow interference in the Israeli election, something we're very sensitive here in the United States because of the last elections. Is there such a dynamic, and how will it play out?
You mean an American interference in the election?
A Russian interference in the Israeli
election. Russian interference. Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you. There has been an interference of the Russians. What worked in the United States, why shouldn't it work in Israel? depends what they really want, the Russians. They will interfere. They will, at least they will make an attempt. Israel is being doing quite well on cyber war, or anti-cyber attacks. As Netanyahu was bragging about, in this case, he's right. I mean, he cannot take credit for it. This is in spite of the very poor investment in Israeli high-tech of the government. It's in spite of this. But depends whether Putin is Machiavellistic and he wants to see Netanyahu in power in order to make sure that the Americans will be criticized by that Trump will not be able to take credit for making peace between Israel and the Arabs, because it will not happen as long as Netanyahu is in power, and he doesn't want to see the Americans, because in any case, if there will be some progress in the peace process, it will be a Pax Americana, and the Russians will be out. He doesn't have a problem, Putin, with the status quo, that he plays a major role in Russia. He needs Netanyahu to beg him, and Netanyahu has nothing much to offer him. So I don't rule it out that they will try to interfere. I don't see Putin helping Meretz.
We have a question here about Netanyahu declaration that there won't be a Palestinian state. A Kushner proposal that there won't be borders from the interview that he gave. And how is that Trump peace mystery, peace proposal we don't know much about, playing out in the Bibi Bennett fight over right-wing voters?
Mm-hmm. You see, there are billboards everywhere of the handshake between Netanyahu and Trump. Of course, not with Arafat. This is in the archives, deep, buried in the archives. You remember that they shook hands in Wine Plantation? I will not be surprised if Bennett will take, will find it and will put it, a banner of a billboard of Netanyahu with Arafat. But I think that what Kushner has in mind is, when he said that there will not be borders, is a functional solution. You remember the old Shimon Peres solution of no borders, which means the Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank will be able to vote for a Palestinian state, but the state will not have borders. It will be an entity without borders. It will be able to appoint ministers and even ambassadors to the United States. It will be a Palestinian state without borders, which is people will get a Palestinian passports, being citizens of a Palestinian state without defining the borders of the state. So determination will be according to the place of birth of your parents or your place of birth. If you were born in Ramallah, you'll have a Palestinian passport. Okay, but it doesn't mean, it's a kind of an autonomy. Actually, the first one who was speaking about this was Yitzhak Rabin. He will say that there will be something less than a state. He used pachot mimedina, less than a state. So I believe that this is what Kushner has in mind, because if you want borders, you will have to divide Jerusalem, okay? And I don't think that this American administration is going to go as far as dividing Jerusalem. The Palestinians will never take less than they were already offered by Olmert and Clinton. They cannot reverse it. They can ask for more, not for less, of what they already had.
We have a question here. An assertion that peace supporters are minority in Israel and the majority rule, that majority of Israelis are not interested in peace.
That's true. It's not that they're not interested. The polls are showing that you have two types, maybe three types of Israelis. There are those who support the two-state solution and will vote for Meretz or for Labor or for the Arab parties. There are those who support the two-state solution, but don't believe that we have partners. That and this is the majority of the Israelis. They would say, we don't like the settlements. We don't like a one-state solution. We would like to have two-state solution, but we have to put it on the back burner, not now, because we need to wait until the Palestinians will become as Europeans, until they will open their eyes and they will give us what we want, which means that Jerusalem will be united, they will recognize Israel as a Jewish state, and so on. So most of the Israelis, they sleep well with the occupation because they feel that it's not our fault, it's not their fault. They want peace. They are willing to make gestures, but they really don't really understand what are the minimum requirements of the Palestinians, which are based on the international law and the international community's consensus, which is 22% of the mandatory Palestine. Okay, the UN offered them 45%, they turn it down. Now, since 88, when they declared their independence, they are willing to take 22%. As Arafat told me in one of his last interviews, is that the Palestinian people didn't authorize him to go lower than 22%. They can maybe swap 1 or 2%. But this is their threshold. He said to Clinton, if you want me to divide, to agree, to give up the old city, the sovereignty over the old city, you want me actually to commit suicide.
And that ties to our next question, which is a government, best case scenario, led by Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid, would they change how would their policy possibly change regarding the settlements and a negotiation with the Palestinians? And will there be substantive different than Likud at the end of the day?
It depends. You know, we say this cliche that you need two to tango. In this case, you need at least three to tango. And the third one is the United States. Because as I said before, the Israelis are willing to challenge the Arabs. We have a very strong army, but they stop short of antagonizing the president and the American Congress. The last one who did it, Yitzhak Shamir, lost in the 92 elections on the loan guarantees, that he wanted to have it both ways and to force President Bush Sr. to allow him to keep building settlements and to expand the settlements. And it didn't work. So this is a lesson to all Israeli prime ministers. You can declare war or you can resist a war and win a war against the Arabs, you cannot do it against the United States. And here is where you come, you American Jewish community, to send the message to the Congress that being, because as I ended my article that you will be able to read on Al Monitor tonight, actually a few hours from now in the United States, is that if AIPAC will let go will say, we did what, this is enough, what we did was this shallow statement, they will not have the right to call themselves the pro-Israeli lobby. Because being a pro-Israeli and pro-Zionist is doing everything you can in order to put an end to the occupation and to the political status quo. And that means to write to your congressman and to go to Washington and demonstrate in front of the hotel where AIPAC will hold their convention and tell Netanyahu what you think Israel should do.
Thank you. And many of us are calling for AIPAC to not allow this, what we view as campaign speech on just before the Israeli election to influence the election, and definitely in recent political moves of normalizing the racist Kahanists. I'd like to, so thank you everybody for joining. I'd like to thank you, Akiva, so much for helping us get through this very complicated political terrain, historical and extraordinary moments in the country we love and wish well, and for calling us to action. I'd like to thank the staff of Partners for Progressive Israel for their work in making this and other great conversations happening to help us better understand and be better engaged in these dynamics. Please, if you can go to progressiveisrael.org, you can learn more about Partners for Progressive Israel and future programs. I'd like to thank everybody who joined us today, and please join us again for other events. And thank you so much, Akiva. We're looking forward to hearing you as we get closer to the election itself and analyze what happened once the voter, the Israeli voter, said their word in the polls. Thank you very much to everybody, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you, Gilly. And I urge you to, it's very easy to register to almonitor.com. Just put your email at the right place and you'll get our newsletter, and you can follow me in the Israel Pulse and my great colleagues, and you'll get an update every hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the day.